I started, I left the law practice in about 2003.
Okay.
And started giving attention to the financial sector, thinking that preservation of resources was important to me at the point. And so I gave more attention to economic studies, and I wound up being invited to represent the firm that I thought was the best forecasting firm, financial and economic forecasting firm in the country at the time. It was the firm of Jude Winiski. He had been the opinion writer for the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal in the 80s or so, and he was very much involved in the so-called supply-side economics of the Reagan administration. Mm-hmm. And he wound up inviting me to represent him on the West Coast and to write some pieces now and then.
Yeah.
And in that circumstance, I was fairly well involved in supply-side economics, you could call it, mm-hmm. or basically I call it classical economics, classical economic theory. And in those circumstances, I had already become a speaker. Well, no, that's not true. I started working for him before I became a speaker for the Chartered Financial Analysts, the CFAs,
okay.
who are the technical heavy lifters for the financial industry.
Yeah.
Analysis. And it was actually at the time that Jude Winiski suddenly died. Much to my regret, it was in 2005 when he passed away. And by that time, he and I had co-written an editorial for the Washington Times, I believe it was, on the kind of nonsense that the Federal Reserve passes on for economic theory and procedures and so forth. And he and I actually were planning to start our own capital management firm because even though his financial economic forecasting was so superior, in my view, no big firms were actually admitting they were implementing it. They were maybe taking it into account, but we thought we could do that. But he died suddenly, and so that didn't happen. I had qualified to become a money manager, but I fortunately didn't do it because 2008 wasn't very far around the corner. And all of that sort of thing. And one of the last things that I was dealing with Jude about, I had had enough time on my hands to do some researching. And I reported something that I had found about the Great Depression. And, you know, Jude had himself written a very important book, The Way the World Works, in which he believed that he had explained the cause of the Great Crash and how it happened and so forth. But when I told him what I found, he was saying I had to write a book, which I didn't want anything to do with, frankly, because I knew how much time it takes and how little remuneration there is and so forth and so on. But nevertheless, as after his passing, I then became a speaker on the CFA circuit, you might say, spoke in a number of states about various topics of interest, including illicit trading. I insisted on talking about, you know, what I wanted to talk about, And finally, my talking about the kind of fraudulent dealing that was so prevalent on Wall Street by the big firms, not just the little guys, as well, that I was eventually actually taken down from the Speaker's Bureau, even though I would, at the time, I think was about as popular as anybody around. I had been asked, for example, to set up a conference or symposium, whatever you want to call it, in Los Angeles for the CFA Society there on the subject of naked short selling. Naked short selling being the practice of selling shares short when you don't borrow the shares and you don't deliver them. And actually, what I was learning in my research about the Great Depression is that's exactly what was done in the Great Depression, or in the Great Crash, I should say.
Yeah.
Certainly continues through the Great Depression. But the crash was essentially a planned event. It was orchestrated. The big guys were all in on it. On a certain signal that they picked, they would begin selling short without limit. And of course, even in those days, there was no law even to say you had to deliver the shares, borrow and deliver them. There's none of that. Yeah. So they just had free rein, and they, on their prearranged signal, each of those days of the Great Crash, the signal happened and all of them sold at the same time and wiped everybody out, and they made millions and billions even those days. And so after the passing of Jude, and then eventually getting taken down on the Speaker's Bureau, I certainly had time to do more research. And so I began seriously working about the research on following up on what was all involved in the Great Depression, what were the acts, what were the conditions, and so forth. And I began learning that all of the economic positions taken by the so-called respected economists of the time were just false, or at least they were inaccurate. And much of it, I think, was understood and therefore false and contrived. But there's always an excuse for being everything except this power, the powerful financial force. And I think at this point, it would be appropriate for me to get into this thing of that Archbishop Vigano was addressing in November, when he called for an alliance of nations to be urgently formed for the purpose of fighting and defeating and destroying the globalist cabal.
Yep.
Now, that is right out in your face about exactly who our enemy is.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be happier about that, that call for the vigilance, because in my book, I report in some detail, the origins of the discussions of the so-called cabal and what it's all been about all these centuries of its existence.
Yeah.
And of course, during our lifetimes, it's always been referred to as a conspiracy theory or something of the sort, that you can't really put any stock in this. This is nothing except made up stuff of people who get the wrong end of economic judgment and so forth. There are two or three important landmarks that I identified when I was doing my research and writing my book and reported it in my book. And to sort of get to the point of it without covering every aspect of details, there are at least two important historical signals you know, within sort of recent times. One was 1879, 1880. In 1879, an unknown newspaper publisher, whose newspaper had in fact gone broke, bankrupt, during the Great Depression of the 1870s in California, wrote a book. He couldn't get a publisher for it, so he self-published in 1879. The name of the book was Progress and Poverty, and the author was named Henry George, a man I had not heard of before. I might have heard from him about him, but I'd never noticed it until I happened to put my hand on a book when I was doing my research in the library, and it was his great book, Progress and Poverty, that sold so many copies in the first year that it got a New York publisher, and in the next 20 years became by far the best-selling book on economics ever written.
Wow.
Between 1880 and 1900, it sold more than 2 million copies worldwide in multiple languages.
Wow.
And when I picked it up, I opened it and couldn't put it down. I actually included a full chapter on that book because it's so important. In the lay of the things that are important now, it was necessary that I include a somewhat comprehensive but summary discussion of what he talked about. And essentially, Henry George eloquently described why so many people are so poor in neighborhoods and areas right next to the richest people in the world.
Yeah.
He had come to that amazing conclusion as a newspaperman in California when he went to New York City to set up his own wire service to serve his little newspaper out in California. And while he was there, he noticed the great severe poverty in the slums of New York around Wall Street. And he set out to discover why that was so and to explain what needed to be done. And he did so in such a masterful way. It's just amazing to read. He explains each of the theories of why people are poor and why there are so many of them and what causes it. First one being the Malthusian theory, that there are just too many people and too many poor people having children and so forth and so on. And just too many people make too many poor people. And he showed and explained carefully why that was not so. And he went through the rest of the theories as well. And he finally, having explained each of them so convincingly that they were invalid, in my opinion, he then, in the final chapter, gets to a point of, he includes one paragraph in his last chapter, just a page or two or three from the end of it. And he says, there is in the world a powerful pecuniary force that writes laws and molds thoughts in every nation. And basically, of course, he's talking about the globalist cabal. And he certainly was not excluding the United States of America when he said in every nation. And so you start putting these kinds of things together and you find out that things such as America being described as a capitalist nation and the leading capitalist nation, and that the hallmark, the insignia of the capitalist approach to business and economy is Wall Street's banks.
Yeah.
Now, in my opinion, that is a great deception. Our economy has not been capitalist, except to the extent of basically what we call Main Street.
Yeah.
But on the Wall Street scale of things, and on the national scale of things, Wall Street has been the outpost and the symbol of mercantilism, which is the medieval economic system of kingmakers, in which those powerful families of the globalist cabal control the kings, and then therefore get the favors of the king in doing whatever commerce and other business or activities they wish to do. That's mercantilism. That's the very friendly term given to them because they are so powerful that if you call them something bad, you'd have to pay for it. And so while we have been called capitalists beginning, and every time there is a major problem caused by so-called capitalism, they point to the capitalists and so on. And it's really the mercantilists of Wall Street that are wiping out capitalism, which is essentially Main Street and the ordinary communities and business people and producers that were so successful in growing the middle class. That we have by 1900, we had another book written, also a landmark. This is basically 20 years after Progress and Poverty came out. We had, I think that'll be picked up in just a moment.
Oh, no, that's fine. You're good.
Yeah. But in any event, we had another important book that also attests to the existence and reality of the globalist cabal. This one was one written by a man who was not prominent at all at the time. He was a British subject, a commoner, supposedly. But was writing science fiction and horror stories, and I guess making a living with that. But he actually had connections to the royalty because he was chosen, I believe, to write this book as the scribe for the mercantilists, as the scribe for the globalist cabal. And the book was called Anticipations, published in 1901. And it is rarely available in this country. It took me a while to get my hands on it, even though there was a copy in the historical library, private foundation library that was very short distance from my home at the time. And I knew the guy who was head of research there, a PhD. And I'd ask him, would you mind if I take a look at that book? And he said, sure, and so forth and so on, but it kept getting put off. And finally, I pressed him about it, and his secretary kindly told me, yes, I could come over. I could look at it in the room there under guard, but that if I wanted to get an easier access to it, I could find it online at the University of Chicago Library. And so actually I did the latter, and it worked out just fine. And this Anticipations book had a very long title about the reactions of society to this and that and what have you. But the first quarter of the book or so, the first major section of the book was so deadly dull. If the whole book went this way, nobody would ever read it. But after that first section, it changes entirely, and it begins talking about how society in the world has become misconstructed or something of the sort by this turn of events that has resulted in this great growth of the third class, the middle class, that has upset the traditional system of society, which has a ruling class and those who serve it.
Yeah.
And therefore, this has become such a problem. If it's not dealt with immediately and firmly and decisively, the ruling people entitled to rule will never be able to take control again. They'll lose control permanently, and so we must act. And to do so, we must destroy the entire structure of society. We must control and destroy the middle class entirely. So forth and so on. They described it in quite some detail as to how it's to be done. They described much of what we saw in the 20th century. They described a tax on income earned by the middle class. With higher rates based on the more successful you are, the higher rate you pay and so forth. Estate and gift taxes for those irresponsible, well-off people who don't choose to help our cause, that is the cause of the ruling elite. If people actually feel they've got some benefit from society and duty to society, then they are to be extinguished with the others. But certainly the entire middle class is to be wiped out entirely. And by the year 2000, their objective was to learn how to poison the people of the abyss, the people not to be wanted. They described them, H.G. Wells described them as the blacks, the red skins, the brown skins, the dirty skinned whites, the yellow skins. All dirty skinned whites would be the white people who work and so forth to support themselves. All of those are to be gone. There will be those left and those we choose to service. With that circumstance involved, that book not only put H.G. Wells on the map, it got him invitations to the palaces of Europe. He was the honored guest in 1901 at the Teddy Roosevelt White House, the guest of honor at a reception for him. He went there on the arm of Margaret Sanger, the originator of Planned Parenthood. Not only did he come out singing the praises of Teddy Roosevelt, who is on Mount Rushmore, by the way. Last I looked. He not only came out singing his praises, but later on when Franklin Roosevelt was there, he sang Franklin's praises even louder. In fact, he was the guest of honor and or not so much the guest of honor, but in residence at the White House on multiple occasions for weeks at a time with Franklin and Eleanor. Probably not only giving information from other parts of the cabal or the globalists, but also collecting Franklin's views as to what ought to be done. Because there's other evidence obtained later in the 1938 from an important inquisition by Stalin of a globalist representative who was under arrest there and interrogation, who described Franklin Roosevelt as the most trusted operative of the globalist cabal in history. With those circumstances involved, you have to take a close look at how you've been influenced and look at some of the additional evidence that can be put into the pile when you start evaluating just how you look at the world, what your worldview is, what people are capable of doing and willing to do and have been doing, and how you can detect that, and what you can believe and what you shouldn't believe. For example, today, when we're trying to evaluate who's telling us the truth, either on television or the radio or anyplace else.
Yeah.
When you have already developed your worldview in a certain way, based on, for example, television news, you get a certain perspective of the world that is not going to be designed to make you as accurate and able and capable of of pursuing your own interests as you might think you are. So does that describe the situation we've been in the last year or two or five or not?
To a T. Yeah.
So that is why I was so elated in 2015 when a certain couple came down the elevator. Because by then my book was out by about 4 years.
Yeah.
And the time it was published, there wasn't a whole lot of room for hope that we were going to be able to turn things around. But I had sort of come to the view that there's going to have to be an outsider if we have any chance.
Yeah.
Because it was clear by history that as I think it was 1880, that the cabal decided, and after the election of 1880, in which James Garfield was elected in a runaway Republican convention, or nominated by a runaway convention, and then elected by the people in practically a landslide, they assassinated him within 3 or 4 months, a so-called crazed gunman, same way that Teddy Roosevelt got into office when he was the vice president.
Yeah.
In 1901. And so those are the circumstances in which we live today. That's the reality of the world. And I think it's that that is sort of a summation as to why my book, amongst a number of others, Robert David Steele was the most prolific, and I hope still is the most prolific, reviewer of nonfiction in the world, in the United States. And a couple of years back, he was commissioned to look over the 2,000 plus nonfiction books he had reviewed and to select the top 25 most important books. He wound up selecting those first 25 and then a second 25 of sort of runner-ups that were also important. But my book, The Fruits of Graft, he picked number 6 among the first 25. And he is still the only prominent reviewer of books that has written a word about my book. Obviously, because there is so much influence of the publicity realm of things, whether it's television or newspapers or book publishers or what, that just do not want important information to get out to the public. That changes the narrative that they're they've been selling us for my whole lifetime and before. And so that's basically where I stand today. And I've been very fortunate that the internet came along and has given me some. As a matter of fact, it was Robert Steele who got me my first interview on the on the web some years back, because I had a few interviews on the radio after my book first came out in 2011, and I'll give you a little example of the experience, but. I had, I was very much pleased to get an interview on a big Midwestern radio station That was conservative and would you think would be very interested in the kind of ideas I had.
Yeah.
But it was with a broadcaster who was the man that had been there for 16 years mm-hmm. as the substitute host, that he would fill in for the main mm-hmm. guys or yeah. broadcasters whenever they were traveling or something of the sort. Mm. He invited me to one interview, and we had a half hour or so conversation. And he invited me back for another interview about a month later.
Yeah.
And I began it by saying that it was the most audience response he had ever received in his 16 wow. years in interviewing.
Yeah.
And we had another good conversation. And the next thing I heard is that he was no longer with that radio station. and mm-hmm. I figured I knew the reason, but I tried contact him and was never able to speak with him. Wow. I'm sure he was looking toward trying to support his family and so forth.
Yeah.
And there are similar stories we could go into in other respects, but that's the kind of power that is still aloof, loose in the country. But there's plenty, I think, these days to be more optimistic than I've had room yeah. for in the earlier days, and mm-hmm. I couldn't be more pleased about it. I've been writing since the first of this year, that I believe that the Insurrection Act was invoked, and there's been a good deal of evidence since then to bolster that view.
Yeah.
That the military high command is responsible presently for mm-hmm. For putting down the globalist cabal in its yep. attempt to take over our government. And that okay. is still underway.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I've been optimistic that it was progressing, but I can't say a whole lot about having inside information, which I don't have. I simply don't have inside yeah. information. I come to the conclusion I did about the Insurrection Act
yeah.
for reasons I've explained on my website.
Yeah.
That's classicalcapital.com. And I'm still of that same view, and I'm looking forward to further progress. I think there's been a reason, although it's not apparent to many, I think they're not looking in the right places. Quite a few people are looking in the right places.
Yeah.
And have reason to be optimistic, but at the same time, it's hard not to be, very concerned and alarmed at the amount True. Of harm that has been done in such a short Yeah. time. But nevertheless, a lot of harm has been done in past years that people Yeah. still are not awake to. And I would love for them to Yeah. read about what has been done.
Yep.
For example, during the Great Depression, the specific actions that were taken by Franklin Roosevelt
yeah.
with his great imagination spurred on by his very close communications with the Rockefellers and others
yeah.
As to how best to fool the people and
yep.
how best to make goods and services sell for 2 to 4 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
I explained very clearly how that was done.
Yeah.
In ways that I feel sure have not completely escaped the attention of so-called academic economists. And yet there's been no explanation of it with the reams and the giant volumes that have been written about the Great Depression by Harvard and University of Chicago economists. they seem somehow to have escaped the amount of gold that FDR bought, not mm-hmm. just by confiscating it from Americans. That was a small amount, relatively. Mm-hmm. But from then on, in the first 8 years in office, he took money out of the economy and increased taxes.
Yeah.
And in borrowing through government bonds, he took it out of the economy and bought gold, supposedly put the gold in Fort Knox, and would not permit the Federal Reserve to monetize the amount of gold. In other words, replenish the gold, that the dollars that went out of the economy to buy the gold. He would not allow the gold to be monetized. So that is why there was so little money.
Yeah.
Every place you go in the country, you ask them how they're doing, they'd say, well, nobody's got any money. That's why bread was selling for 2 cents or 4 cents a loaf. Yeah. That's why oil, as J. Paul Getty said, you could buy for 4 cents on the dollar any place in the world. And in those circumstances, it allowed those insider people who knew what was going on to play it exactly right, to buy those oil companies, to buy so forth and so on. When there was just no other buyers with money.
Yeah.
And in those first 8 years, Franklin Roosevelt bought enough gold to more than triple the amount of gold in the U.S. Treasury that we had. Than what we had gained and built up over the entire history of the country since the founding, all the way through the 1920s. And it was not inflation or a wild Fed that caused the crash, as some people are still saying today, the Keynesians again, because there was no inflation during the 1920s. You look at the consumer price index, it's steady as a rock. It was simply a planned dumping of stock by fraud. And then people like Joe Kennedy, who became the first SEC chairman and set it up, therefore, to make sure that the big guys are never never accosted and caught in their crimes. Those are the things that have put into place the same system that robbed everyone in 1929, that starved to death millions of Americans for lack of food during the 1930s. And we have that same globalist cabal at our throats today. And I believe what is happening is we are battling them already in an alliance that has already been formed. We're battling them militarily, not in the newspapers.
Behind the scenes.
And that I think we're going to be have some reported results before much longer. And we'll see how it goes from there. But I'm optimistic, and I hope by expressing this, perhaps we'll give others more optimism as well. And in any event, where we have greater success in prospect than we can imagine with the dark days that we've been experiencing this past year.
I think so. I'm like listening to you. Oh, it was so great. It was like almost me sitting in a class. Like, I love listening to you talk, but I'm like, there's so many things happening. Like, I mean, the Evergrande defaulting, no one's really talking about it, but I'm like, they won't be able to push that back for that long. Cause like I said, S&P joined the creditors, but they're still, they're not officially in default. I'm like, there's so many things happening. There's too many weird things happening for it to be a coincidence. And I'm like, I am optimistic. Cause I'm like, something's going on. Something's happening.
Yes. And we haven't even touched into the really deeply, darkly evil aspects of what they've been doing.
I'll have you back on and we can definitely talk about, I could sit here and talk to you for like hours and like listen to you. Well, just because it's so good, because like you said, this is the history that I've not been taught as a young person. I've been taught, of course, the fake history, like about world disasters, wars that were instituted by the cabal just to destroy countries of the world. And I'm like, you don't hear that in the media because, of course, they want to spin a narrative. And since they're controlled by the CIA and the government, and the cabal anyways, it's like they're all in bed with one another anyways. And it's just made to keep us asleep. But I'm like, President Trump, it's like he's people think that like he's waiting for 2024. And I'm like, this man does not lose. And I'm like, hey, no way. There ain't no way. No way.
Well, yeah, there are lots of of people involved. There has to be in order to be able to confront this place. But thank goodness, apparently we're finding them all over the world. Yeah. I've made the point in the past, and I haven't referred to it, but there's one aspect of the information in my chapter 17. I don't get to explain the aspects of what happened to Russia. Mm-hmm. Russia's czar was kidnapped and assassinated with his whole family, supposedly.
Oh, okay.
In 1917, because I believe he said no to the cabal when it demanded a Rothschild bank.
The central bank, yeah.
And we said yes.
Yeah.
And the Bolsheviks were not Russians who were tired of the czar. They were invaders financed by the Western banks. Does that sound anything like what's happened in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth? It does to me. And the same kind of modus operandi and the same reasons. When Libya started talking about a gold-backed currency, Gaddafi is assassinated and so forth and so on. So we have been fighting this thing, and unfortunately, it's very troublesome to acknowledge that we've been on the wrong side in much of what our good men and women have been sent to do, supposedly in the case of freedom. And I do think the attack on the towers, the evidence is about to blow the top off the lid on it that has been there since it was done. I mean, many are already aware, but many are not. And
that's going to be cognitive dissonance for the people who like lost people in the towers and who realized we were involved in it. I'm like, people, because that's the thing that kind of brought Americans together, but they're going to realize our own government did that. It's like, that's going to be hard for people to wrap their minds around. I mean, it was hard for me when I first awoke to it, because I'm like, all those people and stuff, I'm like, the cabal, they don't care killing people. But it's going to be hard for Americans to realize so much what we've been lied to on. Yeah.
Well, it may sound self-serving, but in order to get your mind right in terms of understanding the significance of this information and where it fits, I can't believe it, but my book prepares you to do that. That's why Robert Davis Steele regarded this a life-changing, transformative book. That is, it provides you so much information and provides you the support for it to show you and allow you to determine for yourself. You've been badly misled in many respects, and when you put into account the real information, it changes the way you evaluate whether something is believable or not, whether someone is telling you the truth or not, or whether a leader has been on the up and up or not. And therefore, in terms of getting ready and preparing yourself to see where all of this fits and who people have been serving when they've been doing something other than serving the office for which they were sworn. It is a it's a great thing to think that perhaps the burden that has been so destructive to so many people over the years, so many nations, so many populations. Today's is certainly not excused from it. I mean, there's so much suffering going on around the world right now that has been done by these people, this cabal, the globalists, the ones that formed the United Nations, the ones that gave them the land. Took it outside the United States so that there supposedly is a foreign entity on the United States property. But I think a lot of your listeners are probably pretty wise to these things by now. But
if they listen to me, they are.
Well, better times can certainly be welcomed by a lot of people, and deservedly so. And boy, wouldn't it be something to be able to witness all this and even participate in it and see something really go right for the world in a big way? When you think about it, and I've thought about it, I think, longer than you have, since I've been around quite a bit longer. The weakness of the explanations for why World War One happened. And for why World War II happened are so ridiculously poor that they should have raised a lot of flags before now, and perhaps they did. But especially when you look at the numbers of people lost in battle during World War One, I reflect them in my book and a chapter on that. And it's got to be just so apparent. People were not dumb and stupid then. It was done in order to exterminate the maximum number of young men, not to mention young women who died on the sidelines or at home or because of war attacks or anything of the sort. But it was an approach toward exterminating by gunfire, as opposed to by a needle or something else. And so it is a pattern that the 20th century is a dismal, dismal century when you look at all the harm and death caused so intensely and on such false pretenses. So hopefully we're going to do better in the 21st century.
There are bright days ahead. It's we may have to suffer a little bit going forward, but I'm like, there are bright days ahead. The future is bright. It really is. I mean,
Yes. And so there we are. What else would you like to ask or anything else?
Well, actually, I'm getting ready to have to go in a few minutes, but I definitely want to have you back on again. Because like I said, I mean, there's so much we could talk about. I'm like, I love interviews like this, particularly when we can talk about like the bright future and stuff. I'm like, I love it. But yes, but thanks so much for coming on. Like I said, this has been good because it's been a good history lesson for me too. Cause I'm like, I didn't know even a lot of this stuff. I knew like how some of the puzzle pieces fit together, but then listening to you, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. So.
Well, that's great. Well, there's a lot more to it. I can remember a certain amount and try to cover it brief way. But I certainly am happy to have your invitation, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Hello, fellow patriots, and thank y'all for watching today's episode. I would also like to thank the sponsor for this episode today, Advanced Home Pros. Solar energy has likely never been more popular than it is right now because of many Americans wanting to get off the grid away from the deep state power companies. AHP is the highest rated and most reviewed in Utah County and has unparalleled customer service. The founder of AHP, Steve Cloward, is a personal friend of mine, and he is a fantastic, true-blooded patriot to work with. If you would like to know more about solar energy and how it can power your home, go to advancedhomepros.com and mention Hannah with the Red Patriot Show to talk with an expert today. There are so many amazing Patriot businesses, and we all need to support them so that together we can defund the deep state and refund the kingdom. Until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood Patriot, Hannah, signing off. And remember, stay encouraged. Thank you for watching The Red Patriot Show. To find more of my content, resources, and where you can find all of my video platforms, as well as all the social media outlets I use, go to www.theredpatriotshow.com. That's www.theredpatriotshow.com. See y'all later.